Mr. Gormley, Rail 17. You wanted to tell me about the feeding arrangements when you made that long rail journey.
Yes, well, in the first instance, I know it was a long rail journey. It took 10 days. Mainly, we travelled at night. But as we journeyed up, we were dropping people off every cantonment where they came to, where people would need to be dropped off at all the different stations, going through such as Delhi and all that, as you came up the line. And then there was always they always had a good hot meal waiting for you. And then you would have your meal when you got there. And then you would sit there, you know. And then as night came, then you would travel. So we actually all you actually saw was a little cantonment that you were in. You never actually saw any of India in that respect, because you weren't allowed away from the train and that. So, as I said, we just fed as we went, all the way until we got to Nowshera. And of course, by the time we got up to Nowshera, which was the last stop of the railhead, there was only a couple of dozen of us more or less left on the train. But on saying that, on its way back, we would probably pick all the people up who were being relieved or going home to England and that, or being sent to different stations. They would pick all them on the way back and drop them off. So,
why were you travelling at night rather than through the day?
Mainly because the main locos were running on the lines, the main line. The main line and always had these express trains. And it was mainly single track, you see. It was just a mainly in between. There was only one track. And then when you came to a cantonment, there would be a passing place, so that you would actually pass each other. Otherwise, if you put a double track, so like it.
Was it British Army food in the same context as British in England?
Yes.
You weren't being introduced to Indian curries and things like that yet at this point?
Well, we were at the time. I can't even remember. I mean, I just remember being fed, you know, and then at night when the trains more or less stopped and they could just travel on, then you would travel through right to the next day, you know, and then you'd come to another cantonment, so you would pull up then to allow the main line trains to run down, coming from Bombay and places like that, or going to Bombay and places like that, because it's just the one long line went right away through. And, you know, just branched off to Calcutta and come up to Royal Pindy. There were only the two lines.
You said you were at Nowshera only a few days. So what were you doing there?
Oh, yes. Well, we got to Nowshera, and then we introduced our billet. And that might be worth talking about. Because when we got these billets, unlike the billets that we'd already had in England, wherever we'd gone, where we had the stables underneath and the troops on the top. This was just one long building, about 180, no more. About 100 yards long. Well, it maybe more. It held 120 men. Just one big bungalow. There's no upstairs, I don't like, just a big roof with a big punkers hanging on it, bang, bang, bang. And
What were the punkers?
It's a punker. It's a swinging mat above the heads.
To create a draft.
Swing back and forward, you know. And you really needed them for the Nowshera. You really had to have them. And
was the 100 plus men all in one long room?
All in one room, other than the only exceptions to that were like office staff who more or less slept in their own little billets. Sergeants and sergeant major, or anybody living in married quarters, but the sergeants in WO1s, they all had their own mess and their own billet. The rest, the corporals, all bombardiers and gunners and that, were all in the one billet. Just one billet, right through. There'd be about 120 men in the billet.
And this was a wooden, was it a wooden structure?
No.
Brick structure.
Brick structure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I was saying brick structure, more like what you used to call mutty structure. I built a pretty class. But it was a good structure, and it was earthquake proofed, or made to withstand an earth tremor. You used to get a lot of earth tremors there. And the roof itself was hinged right up from the, and of course it was a big building in itself. I mean, within the building itself was like about 30, about twice the width of this, about 30 feet across inside. And then you had a big veranda which was built on that side, and big veranda built on this side, which ran the whole length of the building. And that was, you know, where we used to sleep on there during the, you know, if it was a nice night, then instead of sleeping inside the barracks, we just drag the beds out onto the veranda and sleep on there, just for the coolness, like, you know. And, it's amazing the way these were hinged. They could go out about 12 to 18, and I've seen it actually go out about 12 to 18 inches, and I don't know how they could, it all used to come back together again. You'd see the cracks, but it would come back together again afterwards. Yeah, many, many times I experienced that over the next 12 to 15 months that we were there. And of course, the externally, you had your ablutions, which were at the end of each place, each corridor and that. So, but then the toilets, they were the old-fashioned netties, as we would used to call them here.
The earth closet kind of thing.
The earth closet type. The only difference was that you used to put these big iron pans in underneath, and the sweepers used to come round and clean them up 3 or 4 times a day, whatever necessary, you know. And the only thing was, yeah, you had to be very quick if you were coming up, you'd pull it out, because otherwise you might have lost them. They just used to come back, they didn't care who you were sitting there on the ground. You couldn't help that, they had a lot of it, like, you know. You should go, someone's come punching you. You should go around 30 days under this stuff, like, you know. What you did, like, when you think back, like, but that's true.
Within the room itself, how much bed space did you have? Was it a packed room, or?
Well, 4 foot between each bed. Yeah, maybe, slightly more, I would say.
So we're pretty close together.
Well, not close is, because we used to be much closer in England. But we'd have about 4 or 5 feet between England.
And were these iron beds?
Yeah. Oh, you had to have iron beds there, otherwise, and you had these, you just had the old three biscuits and that.
Still the three biscuits
on
there.
Just three biscuits on. And that was like just a coir mattress. It was like made of coir, coconut husk, you know. And that's all you ever slept on.
And did you have mosquito nets or those coverings?
Yes, you had mosquito nets, yes. But sometimes you didn't need them, mate. I mean, when we were in Calcutta and all of that area, you really had to put them on. You had to have a much finer net, actually, for the sandfly net there. A much finer net altogether.
And where did you keep your uniform and equipment?
Under the bed and in your lockers. Everything was under the bed and in the locker behind you, like, you know.
And presume
the locker was up ahead, you know. They were all bolted to the wall. And then you had a big kit box. Yeah. Not as big as that. Not so big. Well, it was to fit the width of the bed, more or less, you know. So, say, a 3 foot bed was a 3 foot
locker.
Box. And about 14 inches deep. And you kept everything in there. That box, and I was always locked, I always kept it locked.
Keeping the place clean, was this done by you or by natives?
No, the natives did all that.
So this
we had to be clean to a certain extent, if you understand what I mean. Like, but all the cleaning, the sweepers, you had your sweepers used to come round and sweep all the dust, dirt and everything away. And all that. Even got shaved in bed. Oh, yes, I did. Just come to mind that. I said, First time I'd been in the barracks, you know. I mean, I was just lying there. I woke up and this bloke's lying over me with a tiny bit of razor. I said, really shit me. What's that? Because there's only about four, well, about 10 of us left in the barracks, like, that were waiting to send them on the front here, like, you know, so
that must have been quite an experience to have all this work done for you, which you, in England, of course, you had to do yourselves.
Well, yeah, you had your own cobbler, and then you had the dirty, the tailor. He did all your tailor work, or whatever you needed doing, like, shorty pants, or, you know, or a vest and that. Once he took your measurements, that's it. I had those measurements, and you just had to go and, I want a new shirt, I want this. And he would make it all up, you know, and charge you a few hours, right?
And did you pay the various enablers for the work, with, as you say, a small amount of money?
Yeah. I think we paid £2 a day, I think, for the shaving, which was very... I mean, it was 13 rupees to the pound, and then you had 1,300 pice. Yeah, it was 1,300 pice to the pound, you know. So, it wasn't even took as a day, like, you know. So,
and what was your pay now that you were abroad? You're getting additional money, did you?
Well, we didn't get any additional money as such. It was just that by service seniority kind of stuff, you know, the rent of service you had, you've got to pay it till it came up to 21 shillings. So we were all on the 21 shilling mark. Like,
and
know.
That was in rupees, given
in
rupees.
Rupees, that would be like 13 rupees for the pound.
Which would go a long way, presumably, out there.
Oh, yes, you could live like a blooming lord on that out there. Yeah, you really could live like a lord.
So you had a barber, you had sort of the tailor. What other natives were working for you?
There's a barber, there's a nappy, the dirty, the cobbler.
Laundry?
Laundry used to, every day. They took me, if you wanted what they call the flying dory. If you need a shirt for quickly to get on parade, you used to call a flying dory, and he would take it down the river, bash it, and I'll tell you the exact same he used to say, we used to say that they said, shall we say, white man, teak man, black man, bastard. And he used to throw the bloody thing on a bloody big stone, you know, and they would bring them back, iron it. Everything creased up, you know, beautiful. And you paid extra for that.
And
given each day, like we normally do, to get the fresh for the next day. If you wanted what we call the flying dirt, you had to pay extra for that.
And then you'd have someone who was sitting pulling these.
No, it was automatic.
That was automatic, that was wafting these and giving you air.
It was automatically
He didn't have someone outside pulling the string or whatever.
No. Only if it broke down, that is it. Then
And did the Indians do the cooking for you, or were you your own cooks?
Yes, but you had the Indians did the cooking for you, but you always had the British NCO in charge of the cookbook. My old friend from Pontefract, he was in charge of the cookbook for a lot of years.
How did the British soldier treat the native worker?
Well, you always got that step respect, but I think the average bloke, he just accepted them. You know, he really did. I mean, you didn't think you were cut above or anything like that. If you just acted the way you would at home, you know. And it was amazing, actually. I mean, we always got on very well. As the Clary State Banjos, the bloke used to come round with his little tin fire, and he'd out and come out like, Can we take banjo Tom? And we would all go, if you had any money left, that was, and if you didn't, you used to tick on. You used to tick on with the banjo on, like, till the end of the week, and you would swear up. It's just like being over here.
Was it a tea or chawala? They were there.
That was
the same one, yes.
He did that with a chawala. He had the chawala coming, saying banjos and all this, like, you know, the mangoes or whatever, you know. And then he had the fruit seller. He would sell the mangoes and stuff like that, yeah.
So it was quite a little industry for the natives. There must have been a lot employed in the camps.
There was an awful lot of people employed in the camp, like, you know, going on, even just cleaning up, you know. There's a lot of oil coming to my mind. I normally sit these things out a bit, but I hadn't bothered this time because I've told this fella down there. And
did you have the usual kit inspections, barrack room inspections that you had in England? You weren't there very long, were you?
We weren't there long enough for it, actually, because we took the opportunity to go, because, you know, there's other people who were still there, like base staff, you know. They took us up and showed us around what they call the loose wars bazaar, and they said, well, you've got to watch your gear when you're here, because they'll come in and pinch your gear. And you'll not even know it's gone until they come up here and find it there, but you'll have to pay to get it back.
Who were these loose wallers?
What the term loose wallers? They could go into, and I've actually seen it done. They could actually walk into a barrack room, and you could, you know, they were wide open. You know, it wasn't enclosed at all. Not unless you needed to, right? I mean, you could jam doors open that way, but normally it was just kept wide open. And they've actually, and I've known it to happen, where they walk in, they take the sheets from under your bed, and you don't even know they're taking it off.
And these are Indian people, are they? These Indians?
Just come in, and they would oil the bodies, top to bottom. They would oil the whole body. So if you could hold them, there's no way to roll them. They would wriggle out. Alright, and I've seen things happen there. Later on, I'll mention it now. This happened after we come back from the front here, and we're on guard duty. And I'd been there, and I couldn't sleep. And I thought, I'm not seeing anything. And I was lying back in my bed like that, and I was watching. And I just didn't say that, you know, I was half asleep. And there was four of these loose wallers up on the roof, and I had a whole rifle rack full of rifles, and they thumped it from the top with thumps, and the bloody rifle rack was halfway up the ceiling when I saw it. If I, because you know, we used to come up, Joey used to fall straight asleep, like, you know, because we'd been out there a couple of hours, and the heat was oppressive, as I say, and I fucking gave a shout, you know. That woke the guard commander up because he was asleep. I woke him up and we saw this, and of course they dropped it, they just let it go. But if I hadn't been awake that night, that whole rifle rack, with about 10 rifles in it, was on its way up there, and they would have it. That's how clever they were, right? And I mean, at least 3 times the height of this, the guard will.
So they were quite experts in their job.
Experts, yeah. The only one I think can beat them, that's the Persians or the Iraqis. The Iraqis especially, but the Indian loose collar, marvellous the way he could. The things he could do.
And these people came from outside the camp into the camp to do it.
They're coming to the camp. That's why we always had trawler pickets on. Always had a trawler picket. That's all you had to do. You had to walk round and round, and you didn't go any set given way. You just change your mind, went this way, that way, and over there.
And presumably, if you're on this trawler picket or guard, and you saw them in
you had a pickout.
You could hit them or shoot them or whatever, did you? Yeah.
We had a pickaxe. Okay. I thought, well, if he can get near enough to hit him with a pickaxe, like, he's not going to get up again, is he? Or he'll have difficulty, like, you know. Yeah, he had a short pickaxe. That's what he carried. On a problem pickaxe, that was. Other than that, like, he had your normal rifle, bayonet.
And looking at, again, of course, we're looking ahead, but we're talking about getting on with the Indian people. Did you have any problems whilst you were in India with riots or?
Not in that area. No, never had any. I had later on in life. Much later on, but not in that area. Of course, where I'm talking about now, they were nearly all what you call muscle men. I don't think there was an Indian enclave anywhere in the area, because it was full of what we call Pakistanis. They were really Pakistani. It was a nation of its own. Like, you know,
these were Muslims, were they? As against
all Muslims, you see. I mean. Later on, further down country, where there was a lot of mixture, but up there, I can't remember any Indians at all being in that area.
So you were there, you say, just a very short time, basically waiting to be moved forward.
Yes, well, as I say, we just had a quick shooting round to show what the setup was, really. We did not take it in, to be honest, and within 10 days or so. We set off in these wagons, and of course the only fellow in charge was and the driver, like, they were the only two that had ever been shot at, I think, as far as I know, anyway, at that time. In fact, they might not have been shot at all, I don't know, but we just took it for granted with them being out there all that time that they had been shot at, like, you know. So we set off from Nowshera, and we went up to a place called Fort Attock, and it's a proper fort, like, built in the style of a fort, you know, and the East Yorks were there. Well, my brother was in the East Yorks, but he wasn't in India at that time, but there was quite a talk with some of the lads, and there was quite a few of them knew him, like, from the depot, when you've been in the depot in England. And so we had quite a nice night there with them, and then we went from there. We were making for a place called Garryowen Camp, which was way up in the mountains. And you could see the road more or less petered out. We were just driving on rock and roll and that, that you got up, and the further you got, the worse it got, the more desolate it got, actually. And you were looking around, and shrubbery was at a minimum, you know, you were just seeing odd stand of trees here and there, like, or odd bushes too, like, you know. And then this was like the second year, and we covered about 150 miles, I think, something like that. Quite a way, isn't it? And because we're in all day traveling, you know, and climbing all the way as you went. And then we came to this pass going up to Garryowen Camp. And gosh, I put that feeling gone in there. You're going up there, and you're climbing up like that, like a hairpin, going up the side of the bloody mountain like that, all the way up. And we covered 6 bloody miles in that day. I know, because I measured it coming down like later on, you know. 6 miles back and forward across the hillside, like that, going up this hillside all the way. And we got at the top. And we went over the top, and as we got to the top, we were right down in the valley, we see this little camp. Well, it seemed like those look at what we were like, you know. But as we got into it, we realised it was quite a large camp, actually, when we got into it, because the Argives were there, and the Totsi Scouts, there was a battalion of Gurkhas there as well, from Air Force Rifles. Oh, there was a full brigade in there. So we got in there, and when we got in, we found everywhere was sandbagged. They dug down, so you were actually below head height. And then you had your tent stretched over the top of that. That was the only protection you had, like the tent and the sandbags. It sandbagged everything around me as it went down. And we just slept there. That was the type of place we slept in. You know, just on the ground sheets. We got a bit of hay and that, whatever we could find out. Anything that we could do just to make a platform, like, you know.
And this was a tented camp then that you were in, was it?
Tented camp, yeah. But of course, you couldn't have the tents above ground, because from then on, every night in that camp was sniped, every night. And you didn't know where it was coming from. It would just come from there, come from there, come from there, there. You just didn't know where the sniper was going to snipe from. And all round, on all the hilltops, right the way around, all had little sanders built. There were not quite a distance in between each sanger, I'd be like, you know, but you had a little sanger, and that would hold about a platoon of men. You take a platoon up there, and they would live, sleep, and eat in that place for a week. Or if they were getting under attack, they would sleep there for a fortnight or even more until you could relieve them. And
were they in communication with each other all the way around and with the camp?
It was all heliograph. They would bit us. Flash, 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 flash. I think everybody learned the heliograph just because of that, like, you know. It was all heliograph in those days.
So you're right in the middle of enemy territory.
Oh, yeah,
is this the Afghan frontier?
You were surrounded by them.
Is this the Afghan frontier, Afghanistan? Is it that area?
It was Iristan.
Right.
Borders onto Afghanistan. That borders Afghanistan, but this was Waziristan, a place called Waziristan.
And who was sniping and fighting them there? Was it Afghans or other people?
Well, they're all tied with the same dust when it comes to killing an Englishman. it's true. They're all tied with the same dust when it comes to, if they can get you, like, you know, that's a big kudo for them, like, you know. And there's quite a lot of things up there.
Can you describe the camp in detail for me? I mean, you're in tents, but what...
In detail, right. Well, we're always forming the guns, irrespective of what. So you had one point in practically every direction of the compass. In other words, if I swing that way and swing that way, he would swing that way and swing that way. So you were always...
All-round defence, isn't it?
You had an all-round defence within the defence. And the infantry, who were all in different sections of the camp, you see, we would be more or less like forming a ring in the middle.
You were in the centre, were you?
More or less the centre. While we're in the camp, you were more or less forming a ring within the centre of the camp. And then the infantry would be scattered around, with our guys here, somebody else there, and they would all look to their own defences. Everywhere you had a palisade and wall, which had all been built by hand, been built long before I got there, by the way. But they would have a big palisade and wall which went right the way around the camp, standing mullies, what, 6 foot? Yeah, about 6 foot in height. No, probably a little bit more, because they had the palisade was stood up about another 2 foot inside.
Not a fire step, like, yeah, a fire step.
Like a fire step, but then you stood and looked over the top, you know. So it'd probably be, I would say, nearly 8 foot high. And that was being built by the people who preceded us. They'd built all this thing. And I mean, when I'm talking about the valley, I'm talking about going from here down to Bowden Colley and back round. That's it. You've got to be the whole of the troops it had.
So it's a very big camp, very wide, yeah.
Very big camp, oh, yeah.